Usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of mechanical precision.
Right.
Like you break your arm, the x-ray shows the jagged white line, and the doctor just points to the film and says, there's the problem.
Yeah, it's comforting because it's binary. The
Exactly.
structural failure is right there in front of you, and it dictates a very clear physical solution.
Right, but the moment you step into the world of neurology and, well, complex brain networks, that whole structural x-ray model just completely breaks down.
It really
We're
does.
suddenly dealing with a diagnostic landscape that is entirely fluid. It relies on timing, pathways, and these invisible electrical thresholds. And that brings us to our deep dive today. We are looking at a huge stack of sources, academic papers, university press releases, and scientific news articles ranging from 2013 up through 2025.
Quite a timeline.
Yeah, and they all track this massive paradigm shift in how we map and treat drug-resistant epilepsy. Our mission today is to figure out how crossing economics with theoretical physics actually solved a huge medical roadblock.
It is an incredible progression to trace
Yeah.
because we're looking at a journey from highly invasive, physically taxing brain surgeries to the development of non-invasive mathematical algorithms that can map a neural network from the outside.
And what's wild is that to solve this purely neurological problem, researchers had to look outside of medicine entirely.
I really did.
Specifically, we're going to dive into the research of Dr. Mukesh Damala on something called Granger causality and look at how his team mapped the causal flow of brain networks.
Right.
But before we can get to the elegant math, I feel like we have to talk about the physical, clinical nightmare that forced mathematicians to get involved in the first place.
We do, because the baseline standard of care for a specific demographic of epilepsy patients was simply hitting a wall.
Yeah.
We have over 50 million people worldwide with epilepsy,
Wow.
and for a large portion of them, anti-seizure medications managed the network instability beautifully.
Right. They could just take a pill and they're okay.
Exactly. But that is not the case for everyone.
Okay, let's unpack this because our sources point out that roughly 30% of epilepsy cases are drug resistant.
Right.
The medication just cannot suppress the network from overloading and misfiring. So for that 30%, the standard clinical path has to shift to surgery.
It's the only option left.
Right. And the goal is to physically resect or remove the seizure onset zone, like the exact cluster of tissue where the network cascade begins.
Right.
But to remove it, obviously, you have to find it first.
And that localization process is exactly where the structural X-ray analogy fails completely.
Right.
Because an MRI might show a perfectly healthy looking brain structure, yet the electrical network running through it is constantly misfiring.
So you can't just take a picture of it.
No, you can't. To find the origin point, patients undergo intracranial EEG or IEG.
Which sounds intense.
It is extremely intense. They are hospitalized, neurosurgeons literally open their skull, and they place grids or depth electrodes directly onto or into the brain tissue.
And then the patient just sits there, right? Like in an epilepsy monitoring unit, usually with their medication tapered down.
Yes.
And everyone basically just waits for them to have a clinical seizure so the electrodes can record the origin.
That's the standard procedure.
But here is where I really get tripped up by the sources. They say that even after going through all of that, opening the skull, placing up to 100 sensors directly on the cortex, waiting for the traumatic event, the success rate for achieving seizure freedom after the subsequent surgery is only about 40 to 60%.
That's a sobering statistic.
Wait, if the electrodes are literally physically touching the brain tissue, how are they missing the origin nearly half the time? Like, is the brain just too vast and we don't have enough sensors, or are we measuring the wrong thing entirely?
It's actually a combination of both.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which creates this massive spatial and temporal sampling problem. So, first, consider the spatial limitation.
Okay.
You have maybe 100 electrodes. The human brain has 86 billion
Oh,
neurons.
wow. Okay. That puts it in perspective.
Right. Even with a grid covering a large area of the cortex, you are only sampling a tiny fraction of the network. There are massive blind spots.
So it's kind of like trying to find a single sparking wire in a massive city power grid, but you have to crack open the pavement everywhere and then just sit around waiting for a blackout to happen to see the spark.
That is a perfect analogy. And a seizure could easily originate in a deep fold of tissue, a sulcus, that sits right between two electrode contacts.
So it's starting in a shadow, and by the time the electrical cascade spreads wide enough to hit the nearest sensor, it looks like the seizure started there rather than in the blind spot where it actually started.
Exactly. We call that propagation. And that leads to The temporal problem.
The timing.
Yes, the timing. High-frequency electrical activity propagates through the brain's network incredibly fast. Traditionally, human experts, these highly trained neurophysiologists, sit and look at the EEG recordings.
Right, which are basically just continuous wavy lines representing voltage changes on a screen.
Right. They're looking for the exact moment the amplitude spikes. They're visually searching for where the wave gets bigger first.
But the human eye can only process so much visual data across 100 channels, scrolling by at, 500 samples a second?
Exactly. By the time the amplitude change is large enough for the human eye to visually register it on a screen, the seizure has likely already recruited a massive network of tissue.
It's already everywhere.
Yes. Multiple channels might seem to light up simultaneously. So the clinician is forced to make an educated guess based on imperfect visual evidence.
Wow.
This raises an important question. How do we stop relying on human eyes and physical spatial proximity to find the start of the cascade?
We need a way to mathematically prove the origin of the signal based on the data we do have, rather than relying on where the wave eventually crashes.
Precisely.
And this is exactly where Dr. Damala's research pivots the whole field. Because human visual analysis was failing 40 to 60% of the time, they needed an entirely different analytical framework.
They did.
And they found it in a concept developed in 1969 by Clive J. Granger,
yes,
who eventually won the 2003 Nobel Prize in Economics,
yeah,
which is just wild to me.
It is wild. It's Granger causality. It was originally designed to investigate causal relations in financial time series data.
Right. Time series data meaning data points indexed in time order, like tracking the daily price of oil, or inflation rates, or stock market indices over years.
The underlying logic of Granger causality is actually very intuitive, even if the math gets complex.
Okay.
It's basically about predictability and directional influence. The math states that if you have two variables changing over time, let's call them X and Y, and you want to know if Y causes X, you build two mathematical models.
Okay, I'm with you.
First, you try to predict the future of X using only the past data of X. You get a certain error rate.
Makes sense.
Then you build a second model to predict the future of X, but this time you use the past data of X plus the past data of Y. If adding Y's history significantly improves your prediction of X, meaning your error rate drops, then mathematically Y has a causal influence on X. Information is flowing from Y to X.
But this is where I need to push back on the application here a little bit.
Sure.
I completely understand using historical data to predict market trends or supply chain bottlenecks. Economics is fundamentally about human behavior and broad market forces.
Right.
But biological electrical discharges in human tissue aren't driven by market panic. They are driven by ion channels and neurotransmitters. Mm. How does an economic forecasting tool map the physical reality of a neural network?
It's a fair question. The answer is that the mathematics of Granger causality are completely agnostic to the source of the data.
Oh, interesting.
The equation doesn't care if it's calculating the variance of the S&P 500 or the variance of a millivolt electrical pulse in the brain. It is purely a statistical measurement of information flow over time.
Okay, so it's just math.
Exactly. Dr. Damala and his colleagues, like Dr. Charles Epstein, realized that the brain is essentially the ultimate time series generator.
So instead of tracking the daily closing price of a stock, the electrodes are just tracking the microsecond voltage changes of a brain region.
Precisely. Remember how we said human clinicians were looking at amplitude, waiting for the brainwave to get physically larger on the screen?
Yeah.
Dr. Damalare's team stopped looking at amplitude altogether.
Really?
Instead, they took the continuous data from the intracranial electrodes and applied Granger causality to map the directed influence between different regions. They asked who is driving the network and who is just reacting.
And the 2013 and 2014 studies in our stack note, they were looking specifically at high-frequency oscillations, or HFOs.
Yeah.
These are incredibly fast rhythms operating above 80 hertz.
Because HFOs are increasingly recognized as a primary biomarker for epileptogenic tissue, the pathological tissue fires at these high frequencies right as it recruits the broader network into a seizure.
Got it.
So team runs this math and calculates what they call net causal outflow for every single electrode site.
So you calculate the total causal influence a region is sending out minus the total causal influence it is receiving in.
Exactly. If a region has a highly positive net causal outflow, it is a source. It is dictating the activity of the regions around it.
It's driving the bus.
Right. If it has a negative outflow, it's a sink. It's just passively receiving the chaotic signals from elsewhere.
That completely flips the diagnostic model.
It does.
You don't need to visually cache the exact moment a specific wave gets bigger. You just let the algorithm process the continuous time series data and point to the node that is mathematically driving the rest of the network.
And the most stunning validation of this approach was the timing.
Yes, the timing blew my mind.
Because the algorithm is analyzing invisible statistical relationships rather than waiting for massive amplitude spikes, these early studies found that Granger causality could pinpoint the exact origin of the seizure anywhere from 2.0 to 12.5 seconds before human experts could see any visible clinical seizure activity on the monitors.
There's an average of 6.3 seconds early?
Yeah.
The computer mathematically proved the cascade was gathering and directing traffic before the physiological storm even registered on the standard visual readouts.
It's incredible.
It's like measuring a drop in barometric pressure to predict a hurricane, rather than just waiting to see if a tree blows over.
That's a great way to put it. It fundamentally proved that these high-frequency networks precede and underlie the visible seizure. The communication flow happens before the physical symptoms manifest.
Okay, so proving that Granger causality worked on intracranial data was a massive victory. It optimized the data they were getting from invasive surgeries.
Huge victory.
But looking at the timeline of our sources, it's clear the researchers immediately saw the next logical yet seemingly impossible hurdle. If we can calculate causality mathematically, can we do it from the outside?
Moving from intracranial EEGs inside the skull to scalp EEGs placed on the outside of the head introduces layers of complexity that for a long time were considered insurmountable for this kind of high-frequency analysis.
Right, because the skull is a massive insulator. The electrical signal gets diffused through the bone and the scalp, a process our sources call volume conduction.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you introduce an overwhelming amount of noise. Intracranial electrodes are sitting quietly directly on the brain. Scalp electrodes pick up the electrical activity of your jaw muscles clenching, your eyes blinking, even the rhythmic electrical pulse of your own heart.
It creates a chaotic, overlapping mess of signals.
Yeah.
To even begin applying Granger causality, the researchers first had to clean the data using something called independent component analysis, or ICA.
Okay, I see ICA mentioned constantly in neuroscience papers, but how does a computer actually know what part of a messy signal is a heartbeat and what part is a brainwave?
So ICA essentially solves what mathematicians call the cocktail party problem.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Imagine you were at a loud party and there are 10 different conversations happening, plus there's music playing. Your ear receives one giant combined sound wave.
Just a wall of noise.
Right. But because the music has a specific steady rhythm and the person next to you has a specific vocal frequency, your brain can statistically isolate their voice from the noise.
Okay.
ICA does this mathematically. It assumes that a heartbeat, a muscle twitch, and a neural oscillation are statistically independent of one another. They have completely different mathematical signatures.
So an eye blink might have a massive, slow, rolling voltage signature, while a muscle twitch is like a sharp, jagged, high-frequency spike.
Right. ICA breaks the chaotic scalp recording down into these independent components, identifies the ones that clearly match the signature of muscle or cardiac activity, and mathematically subtracts them from the data without distorting the underlying brain waves.
But even with perfectly clean data, the sources highlight that the core mathematical engine they were using to calculate Granger causality was bottlenecking.
It was.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because the standard math used in neuroscience for decades was breaking under the weight of scalp data.
To calculate Granger causality in the frequency domain, meaning looking at specific speeds like those high frequency oscillations above 80 hertz, you have to perform a mathematical process called spectral matrix factorization.
Let's visualize this. The way I understand spectral matrix factorization is to think of a prism.
Okay.
A raw EEG signal is like a chaotic beam of white light. It has every single frequency jumbled together. The mathematical algorithm acts as a prism, splitting that messy white light into distinct, separate color bands. It isolates the 10 hertz band, the 40 hertz band, the 80 hertz band, so you can measure their individual intensities and relationships.
That is a highly functional way to look at it. And for a long time, the specific mathematical prism the field relied on was called Wilson's algorithm.
Okay.
It's an iterative algorithm, meaning it basically makes an educated mathematical guess, checks its error, adjusts, and guesses again until it zeroes in on the right factorization.
But according to the 2025 study in the journal Brain Sciences, Wilson's algorithm fails when things get too noisy or complex.
It does. When you are dealing with scalp EVG data, especially trying to isolate tiny, high-frequency microevents through the skull, the spectral density matrix often contains values that drop to zero or near zero.
And algorithms hate zero.
They really do. When Wilson's iterative algorithm hits those zeros, its computational variance explodes. It fails to converge on a stable answer.
It just spins out.
Exactly. It's like your prism suddenly shatters because the light is too dim.
So they needed a better prism.
Uh-huh.
And they found it in an entirely different mathematical framework called the Janashia-Lag-Vilava algorithm, or JLA.
Yes, developed by Georgian mathematicians, the country, not the state.
Right.
JLA was not originally designed for neuroscience, but its specific properties offer an exact analytical solution rather than an iterative guessing game.
Oh, wow.
It factors the matrix smoothly, maintaining stable computational variance even when the signal is heavily distorted by the skull or corrupted by noise.
What's fascinating here is that the medical consensus had largely accepted that scalp EEGs were just a low-resolution blur.
Right, that was the dogma.
The assumption was that volume conduction through the skull physically destroyed the high-frequency spatial data. But this pivot to JLA proved that the spatial data of those microevents wasn't destroyed. It was just locked inside a mathematical puzzle that Wilson's algorithm wasn't sophisticated enough to solve.
JLA was the key. When Dr. Domela's team swapped out Wilson's algorithm for JLA, they were suddenly able to accurately track the directional flow of high-frequency causal networks from the outside of the scalp.
And the results of the 2025 study are the ultimate proof of concept.
They really are.
They took the scalp EEG data of 6 patients with drug-resistant focal epilepsy. They ran it through the JLA-based Granger causality algorithm, mapping out the sources and sinks to find the exact seizure onset zones.
And we know the algorithm was correct because those 6 patients were part of a cohort that subsequently went through the traditional, highly invasive intracranial monitoring and surgery.
Right.
The researchers were able to compare the algorithm's non-invasive predictions against the surgical ground truth.
And this is the part that gave me chills. Every single patient in that study achieved what surgeons call an Engel class I outcome, meaning they became completely free of disabling seizures after the surgery.
Yeah.
The non-invasive math predicted the exact same pathological zones that the invasive electrodes eventually found. They mapped the origin of the storm without ever cracking the pavement.
It is a remarkable achievement. And a 2023 press release from Georgia State University notes that the team isn't just stopping at high-frequency data right as the seizure starts.
Wait, what else are they looking at?
They are actively exploring low-frequency network activity that happens long before the seizure occurs.
Wait, meaning they want to find the causal source of the seizure without even waiting for the patient to have one?
Exactly. The interictal period, the time between seizures, isn't completely quiet. The network is constantly communicating.
Right.
If JLA can map the subtle pathological flow of causality during a resting state, you could theoretically localize the focus in a standard 30-minute outpatient EEG session.
Oh, my.
No weeks-long stay in the epilepsy monitoring unit. No tapering down medications. No waiting for a traumatic clinical event just to get a map.
Okay, we've walked through this incredibly dense journey. We went from the structural limitations of physical electrodes to applying a Nobel-winning economist's time series math, to upgrading the mathematical prism with a novel Georgian algorithm to pierce through the noise of the skull.
It's a lot of ground covered.
It is. So what does this all mean for the listener who isn't a neurosurgeon or a computational mathematician?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this research fundamentally changes how we interact with any complex system. Whether you are analyzing a biological network, a global supply chain, or a massive artificial intelligence model, human nature tends to focus on the isolated point of failure.
Right.
We look for the one machine that broke or the one node that spiked.
We look for the single sparking wire.
We do. But Dr. Domela's application of Granger causality proves that waiting for the failure point to visually manifest is the least efficient way to solve the problem.
Ah, I see.
The failure is just the end result of an invisible cascade. By mathematically analyzing the continuous flow of relationships, how node A influences node B, you shift from a reactive posture to a predictive one. You map the causal architecture of the system so you can see the instability before it reaches the threshold of failure.
And the sources explicitly note that this precise mapping of causal flow is scaling out into massive new fields. It's laying the groundwork for advanced neuroengineering, designing better brain-computer interfaces, and creating data-driven neuromodulation therapies.
Yes.
We are finally building tools that speak the mathematical language of the brain's internal communication.
We've moved past observing the brain to actually decoding its traffic patterns in real time.
And tracing that evolution leaves me with a final thought I just can't shake.
Oh.
We've seen how JLA-based Granger causality can non-invasively pinpoint the exact directional flow of an electrical storm before it physically manifests. Mm. If we can map that causal flow milliseconds before it becomes a seizure, could the future of epilepsy treatment bypass resective surgery entirely?
It's a fascinating question.
Like, imagine a non-invasive, wearable anti-storm device.
Oh, wow.
A closed-loop system that just sits on the scalp, constantly reading the network traffic. And the moment the algorithm detects that a node is transitioning into a pathological source with a positive causal outflow, the device simply transmits a targeted opposing electrical wave to break the synchrony.
Mm-hmm.
It cancels the causal flow before the patient even knows the storm was gathering. We wouldn't just be finding the spark in the grid without digging up the pavement. We would be neutralizing the surge before the lights ever had a chance to flicker.
That is the ultimate promise of mastering causal flow, not just mapping the system, but actively harmonizing it.
Definitely something to mull over as you go about your day. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.